If you're in the process of finding an officiant for your wedding, but are feeling overwhelmed and confused about the whole process, if you're not sure where to even begin finding someone who can share your story the way it was meant to be told, then this is the episode for you. Bring a pen and some paper because you'll be taking a lot of notes from this week's show, so stay tuned.
Welcome to the Step-by-Step Wedding Prep Podcast by Wedding Connections of the Hudson Valley, the weekly show that makes wedding planning fun again. Here, you'll go from planning panic, that constant sense of feeling overwhelmed, stressed out, and needing to please those around you, to being in control again, feeling confident, encouraged, and calm in planning the day you've always dreamed of. From interviews with industry experts to firsthand planning tips and more, you'll learn ways to make wedding planning easy, affordable, and as stress-free as possible. Now here's your host, Felicia Zammit McMahon.
Hello, and welcome back to the show, where we teach you everything you need to know to plan your wedding like a pro. This is episode number 21, and I'm coming at you every Wednesday answering the most commonly asked questions couples have when it comes to planning their wedding, and bringing you expert advice from the most amazing wedding professionals in the industry. Today, I'm tackling a question that so many of you have, and that is, how do I find an officiant? And to be honest, this is such a challenge for many couples because unless you know someone already, you're now left to find basically a complete stranger, inviting them into your world and telling them your life story and making sure they capture who you are and what you represent as a couple. Your ceremony is the most important part of the day. There's no wedding without it, so whoever you get to be your officiant has to get it right. So because of that, I have on the show today someone who I consider one of the premier experts on this topic. She's a renowned marriage minister and premarital counselor who actually started her career as a chaplain for the U.S. Army. And she uses that experience, as well as other life-changing experiences, which we'll talk about in the show, to design heartfelt, unique ceremonies that really give couples a stress-free and joyous trip down the aisle. Her mission is to not just perform a ceremony, but to prepare couples with the guidance they need to maintain a long-lasting, healthy marriage. She's worked with clients who have been featured in Vogue, Harper's Bazaar, Time, Glamour, The New York Times, USA Today, BuzzFeed News, and Montelucci Bride, and has performed ceremonies for high-profile celebrities that have been featured on shows such as Netflix's Love is Blind, Married at First Sight, and Love and Hip Hop. She's also earned recognition from Essence Magazine and Brides Magazine, and is the first recipient of the Rising Star Award from the B Collective. Most recently, though, she officiated the wedding of Dr. Carrie Ann and Michael Gordon, and they are known as the iconic couple that got married during the Black Lives Matter protest in Philadelphia, and we'll be talking about that a little bit more in the show as well. So I'd like to invite you to sit back and relax and enjoy my interview with Reverend Roxanne Birchfield, the founder of the elite officiant company Married by Rev Roxy. Hi, Rev Roxy. It's so nice to have you here today.
It's so great to be here. Thank you for having me.
I wanted to have you on the show because you have officiated weddings for a very long time and have basically seen it all. And I wanted to have you on to get your insights because for a lot of couples, you know, unless they know an officiant already, maybe from their house of worship or, you know, something like that, finding an officiant is really quite difficult for a lot of couples. And, you know, before a couple speaks to any officiant, you know, there's a lot that they have to consider before they choose the right one. So what are some things that a couple should consider or think about before hiring a wedding officiant?
Yeah, so the first thing I would do is sit down with your partner or spouse, if this is a vow renewal, and just talk about the type of feel and culture, the personal culture. When I say culture, I'm not even talking about like your ethnic background. I'm talking about just your personalities. Like, what type of ceremony do we want? Do we want one that's lightly humored? Do we want a stand-up comedian? Do we want something that's very fairy tale-like? Like, who will exhibit or exude that, like, you know, fairy godmother feel? There's all kinds of different things you need to decide as a couple about what will be so important to you about the ceremony. Once you understand the type of ceremony that you want to create, the vibe, the ambiance, then you think about the person who will orchestrate that entire vision to come to life through their words, their sound of their voice, and their mannerisms and their presence. So I think that those are the two most important things. Thinking about the feel of the entire ceremony, sort of closing your eyes and envisioning that as a couple, and then saying to yourself, who is the perfect person to lead this? Because essentially, this is that one moment in time that the officiant is the boss.
Yeah.
It's the ceremony. The officiant knows everything that should happen, how it should happen, when it should happen, and how it should make the guest and the couple feel.
Yeah. And you bring up some really good points too, because it goes far beyond just basically, you know, reading words off paper and, you know, doing like the legal part of it. But it goes far beyond that. You know, you need to, you know, see what their personality is like and see if they fit your vision. And, you know, you bring up some good points too. Like, do you want humor infused in it? Or maybe you just want it, you know, totally religious, or maybe you don't want any religious aspects at all. So those are things that you need to consider. So you make some really good points. And I think that's partly why I think this is so hard for couples, because you know, they have to find that perfect match, you know, and they're, you know, this is something that you can't mess up, you know, so to find that perfect match can be daunting at times.
Yeah, I think it just definitely takes some self-exploration, which is not necessarily like what we do, I think, as Americans. I mean, it's now coming into being a part of what we do. Like, let me like figure out what I feel and think. But I mean, in general, we're a pretty confident culture, I think, where we know ourselves, we know what we like. But I think that this is a part of your wedding day that you need to do self-exploration on your core values, things that are most important to you. Verbally communicate that to your spouse, which is a skill you're going to need throughout the life of your marriage.
Yeah.
And then make a decision on, you know, let's try to like narrow it down to a few officiants that we can now sit down and discuss, because it might take a few discussions before you guys pick the right person.
Right. Definitely. Now, you know, once a couple gets through all that and they've narrowed it down, what are some of the important questions they should be asking the officiant, you know, when they're interviewing them? You know, what questions should they be asking? Are there any sort of red flags that they should sort of be, you know, mindful of? You know, what does that process look like?
So I think there's a number of things you might want to ask an officiant. For example, if you're the kind of person that knows that you don't know an officiant and you're going to have to find someone starting from scratch, starting from Adam, like I would like to say, then you might want to ask, what are the opportunities that the officiant has to get to know you as a couple before the wedding day? For me, one of my number one ways of getting to know my couples is if they decide to opt into premarital counseling. So here's the thing about premarital counseling. I think it has like a stigma that it's like negative, something must be wrong with your relationship. But it's actually, for me, like getting married without buying a wedding gown. It just doesn't sometimes make any sense. And it not to feel any particular way if you did not do premarital counseling, because I'm the first one to admit I didn't do premarital counseling when I got married. But I did do marriage counseling right before we had our first child. And I realized that I had wished that I had something before. But I got married so quickly that my story didn't really allow for it. But the average couple has some time, right? The average couple is planning their wedding a year plus out, you know, and they have at least 8 hours within a year plus out to sit down with their counselor one session a month or one session every other week to just talk about really important, to be honest, unsexy things that normally, even if you've dated for 5 years, you probably were like, oh, I never asked you about your grandparents. I never asked you to tell me a story about how your grandparents met, or even if they're still married. Like, it's just, there's just a lot to talk about there. So I think the first thing you're gonna wanna know is, how am I gonna be able to get to know my officiant? I do have clients who do not opt into premarital counseling, and that's totally fine. But they do know, and half the time they found me off of Instagram. So they know I live on there practically. So I've seen them watch me day in, day out for years. And half the time they've watched me for a whole year or 8 months or 6 months before they even inquired. So to a degree, they've gotten a lot more information about me than just simply Googling someone and finding them off the internet, or finding them even on a wedding platform, and then you have no place to sort of check in and honestly snoop on them every day. Like, what is a day in the life of, you know? So just make sure that there's some sort of outlet in which you can kind of get to know your officiant more beyond a website. I think websites are very still, and they're only as current as they've been updated. So one of the beauties of Instagram is it has and allows for the interaction on a daily basis. And so that's one of the ways that people have been able to kind of learn what I can do, where I've been, what types of people I've worked for and worked with. And so ask questions that have to do with getting to know. Don't be afraid that you have to look for someone you've never met before. There are totally ways to, hey, how do you get to know your couples? How do you get to customize your ceremonies? Do you customize your ceremonies? And also, are we allowed to see and sort of vet our ceremony before the day of? That way we feel comfortable. Some officiants do not allow for you to see their intellectual property prior to the wedding day, believe it or not. I do. But in my mind, I've learned that that's a luxury. So that's why I've included that in my services, because I see my service as being luxurious. So I allow my clients to fully see word for word what I will say on their wedding day, the script. And they are allowed to rearrange things, take things out. Words have a lot of meaning, and they cause a lot of emotional responses, right? So we want to make sure that the emotional responses, particularly of the couple, is going to be positive and exciting. And I don't want them to get hung up on one word or a phrase that I said because it wasn't really quite what they meant. So those are some of the basic questions you can ask, you know. And then you might also want to ask an officiant, do they have any rules? Not every officiant is a celebrant. I know that that's a really popular type of officiant. A celebrant has been trained to really master the art of presenting the love story of a couple, amongst other things. But some officiants are actual clergy of a religious, you know, sect, and like myself, which people don't ever think because they probably feel like I'm very personable, which is not really what people feel about clergy, unfortunately. But I am very personable because of my background in the military as a chaplain and also in the hospital. So I've kind of interacted with lots of people in crisis from different walks of life. So I know how to behave.
Yeah.
In front of the yeah. world, right? So, but some people are a part of a religious denomination that does ordain them. So you might ask, are there any rules? And I'll give you an example. Some Catholic priests cannot perform a ceremony, one, outside of the actual church itself. So if you want to get married at your venue and you're Catholic, or you want to include a Catholic priest, that's a question to ask. Don't assume that they're coming down to your venue. And also attire, the Catholic priest might request that the bride's dress covers her arms. It's just, you got to ask questions. You got to ask questions because you don't want to assume, and then the day of your wedding realize that you've, you know, made a boo-boo in the process.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is a big mistake. That would be a big mistake if you found out the day of your wedding that you did something that you shouldn't. Yeah, definitely.
Right.
Now, are there any sort of red flags, like if they're interviewing, an officiant, is there anything that they should kind of be aware of? Maybe like in terms of like where they got ordained or how they got ordained or.
Yeah, I mean, I don't like to ever rain on anyone's hustle, I say, because I mean, there is an officiant out there for everyone. That's how I put it. And I'm happy there is, because I know I have my own boundaries, and I'm happy that I know in my heart there's an officiant for everyone, because everyone deserves love in their world and to be loved. And I'm happy that people have the opportunity to find the perfect person. With that being said, there are some things to pay attention to legally. I'm going to stick to the legal aspect rather than the personality stuff.
Yeah,
so from the legal point of view, different states, well, let me start here. The marriage license is predominantly governed by the county, okay? Mm-hmm. There are a little under 4,000 counties in the United States of America.
Oh my gosh.
Okay. So there is no blanket understanding of marriage license process, because yeah, every county has their own way and rules and regulation. That's to tell you how much we should be celebrating the fact that there's different officiants all over the country. Because even the counties aren't even on the same page. Every county does their own thing and has their own way of doing things.
Oh my gosh.
What you need to know is the rules of your county. Mm-hmm. And who is allowed to actually officiate a wedding. In some counties, people are allowed to marry themselves. Yes, it's a fact. Couples can self, I forget what it's called, but they can marry themselves.
Oh,
I don't know
gosh.
That well, because, yeah, parts of Pennsylvania, you can marry yourself. Parts of, I think, Florida, too, you can marry yourself.
Oh,
yeah.
My gosh.
Yeah. Wow. So that's good to know. But then there are other places such as New York City. Let me talk about a popular place that a lot of people come and travel as a destination to. New York City not only requires you to be someone listed that can even officiate a wedding, but you also need to go down to the clerk's office and get registered and have a license number with the clerk office. So for example, you can be a Catholic priest, you can be a rabbi, and never get registered, you can't marry people in New York City. You have to get registered, yeah, at the Justice of the Peace. Now, obviously, for some people, it might be easier than others, but at the end of the day, the point is, in New York City, you can't just call Uncle Bob, who gets his license off the internet night before, and get married at the top of the rock in New York City, and have your New York City marriage license signed off by him thinking you're married, because you're not. According to New York City. So first and foremost, you are going to want to start from the place of looking at the website of your county and seeing what their rules and regulations are prior to choosing someone to marry you, to ensure that the person you're choosing has the credentials that even meets the need of the county.
Yeah. Wow, that's so interesting. Yeah, and it so, you know, obviously, you know, there's a lot of couples from New York City who do get married up here in the Hudson Valley. So, if they were to get their marriage license, would they get their marriage license based in the county where they're going to get married, or would they get their marriage license from New York City?
Not necessarily. So this is like, when I became an officiant, it was like you were slightly going through law school a little bit. Uh-huh. So not necessarily. It all depends on the county's rules and the state and how they incorporate the state. So for example, in New York, you are allowed to use your New York City marriage license anywhere in the state of New York. You only need someone with a marriage, with the license number from the clerk's office when you're getting married in the five boroughs.
Okay.
So for example, when people go to Long Island, you're really not in the five boroughs anymore. So technically, you know, your childhood pastor from your local church in Nassau County can marry you in Long Island, not in the city, right? Because you are not in the five boroughs. So the rules for the license number thing is really for the city of New York. Like if you want to get married in any of the boroughs in New York, this license thing comes into play. Once we go to anywhere in New York State outside of that, the rule changes. So best thing to do, check with the county. already know your venue or an idea where you want to get married and ask questions when you're in the process of getting the license.
Yeah, those are really good points, because those are big issues that you may not even think about when you're, you know, filing for your marriage license or, you know, looking for an officiant. These are huge questions. And it's so funny that you say rules, because you know, we got married in a Roman Catholic church. So, you know, we had to get, well, we wanted to anyway, but we had to get married in the church. Like, they wouldn't do like a ceremony outside of a church. But we were wondering, because I have a family member at the time, he was a brother. And we're like, oh, I wonder if maybe he could do it. But as a brother, he couldn't officiate weddings. So, you know, we went with the priest at the church. Now, we're talking a lot about questions that couples need to ask their officiant and things that couples need to do when looking for an officiant. But what are some questions that a couple can expect the officiant to ask of them? Because the interview process is kind of like a two-way street.
Right. So I can only start from a place of what I do. I know for me, the things that I ask are very similar to the things that I've learned to ask as a chaplain who worked in an environment with people from all walks of life, right? So one of the first things I'm asking, I believe, on your contract before we even get started, or even if someone decides to have an actual face-to-face inquiry type of thing with me, is what is your religious preference? This is a question that people are not used to hearing. It's not normal, I think, in my opinion, in our society. Usually if someone's asking this, they are probably a religious person. Like, that's what people just expect. But I understand that there is more to a human being besides just their ethnic or cultural background. And part of that is the spiritual side to them, to include the religious side. So I always ask people what their religious preference is, because it usually spirals into deeper conversation. And I'll give you an example of why. So I had a client, or a couple actually, who was getting married. And on paper it said, groom is Jewish, bride is Christian. For probably the average person, that looks like, oh, okay, great, interfaith, keep it rolling. Me, I like to ask more questions, because if I see Jewish, I want to know your level of observance, and maybe not only your level of observance, but also your close relatives, such as mom, dad, whoever will be present at your wedding, because they're a part of listening to it as well. And level of observance is going to let me know what I need to do for the Christian side of it, because I understand that there, you know, I know that there is this idea that interfaith means whatever goes, but the reality is religions have rules too. And they have specific things they believe, and I want to ensure I'm creating something that's cohesive and not clashing. So I ask questions, and then for the Christian person, I'm going to ask your denomination, so I can have a better understanding of that. And for example, if I'm talking to someone who says I'm non-denominational, I know I might have a little bit more wiggle room in the things that I can utilize. Whereas if someone tells me they are Catholic or Episcopalian or Anglican, something a little bit more high church, I'm going to also change the kind of style of delivery for certain aspects too. I have that knowledge. I come with that knowledge and background. So that's how my brain works. I don't know how other officiants will be, but for me, I because I'm clergy, I think about religious sensitivity, not just for the couple. And I know that people might say, well, the couple is paying you or the couple is hiring, so that's all that matters. I say, but you know, a lot of times in a lot of traditions, sometimes parents and grandparents are also very much involved. And so I want to kind of consider those things. It's not that I'm going with the grandma or I'm going with mom just because they're paying for it, but I do want to be respectful and to consider the ears that are listening to the ceremony.
Yeah. And I hear that a lot too. You know, sometimes, you know, a couple may not be spiritual at all. They may not have any sort of, you know, religious affiliation, but their parents or their grandparents do. So they may say, well, you know, we don't really want it to be that religious, but because mom and dad are here and because grandma and grandpa are here, let's throw in a little bit of that, you know, for them.
Yeah, totally. Can I tell you a quick story? Like, yeah. So I had a couple, when I first met them, they were like, yeah, we really want a ceremony that's not, we're not religious. We don't go to church. Like, we're good. Uh-huh. We really want it to be about our love. It's our day. Yeah. Literally the night before the wedding.
Oh my gosh.
I have a text saying, yeah, make it religious. Grandma is pissed. Ooh. And that's what she's expecting.
Yeah.
So make it religious. I'm like, okay, that's a whole 360 from what we wrote, or 180 from what we wrote. And so it's one of those things. I'm now asking more questions because of my experience in those moments where it's like, I can't just trust one person out of a bigger family unit. I need to get as much information as I can from almost everyone I can to make the best decision, so that most people are really walking away saying that ceremony represented them, it represented our family, we loved it, you know?
Now, do you think a couple, you know, because of that, do you think a couple should be talking to their family during the whole finding an officiant phase? Or do you think they should just kind of come to the table kind of knowing that stuff already? They don't necessarily have to have a huge like family meeting, but at least know, be respectful of, you know, what others might want.
I would say just go. It doesn't hurt to have it. You know, I think a lot of people would say, no, why do they need to include their parents? I said, you know, I've been in situations before, like, for example, I have a team of other officiants that I use that encompasses people of various different backgrounds, definitely a mix between male and female, because I know there's sensitive. I'm aware that there's sensitivity. I'm sort of like a social scientist. I'm not stupid. Like, there is a level of expectation from people, humans, right? You can't force whatever thoughts I have on other people. I've had a client like a week before her wedding call me and say, I'm in tears. Roxy, I pay for you, but I can't even have you officiate because my dad is Seventh-day Adventist and I have to have a man. It has to be a male. It can't be a woman. I said, no problem. Praise the Lord. I can fix it. I have a male officiant. Literally, I have a male officiant. I wrote the ceremony. I attended her wedding as a guest to ensure everything ran smoothly. And he delivered the ceremony. Everything was well and everyone was happy.
Wow, that's awesome.
You can't take things personal when it comes to the world of someone officiating your wedding. And I think that we're living in a time where there's a lot of sensitivities, but the reality is we can't take everything personal when it comes to something so personal. We can't. We have to make sure that the person's just a right fit for what we need, and that's it. I don't take things personal when someone says, I can't have a woman officiate, my parents would be really upset. Or if someone's Catholic, like, it's never going to be me. Mm-hmm. If they're, you know, about Catholics and they want, you know, a priest, it's never going to be me. Even if I was a nun, it couldn't be me. You know, like, it's just what it is. People have to understand that choosing your officiant is the most personal piece of the wedding day. It really is. There's no one size fits all. I'm not married by Roxy. Unfortunately, you know, it's not for everybody. It's not for everybody, you know, but there is somebody out there for you.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. And do your research, you take the time to find the right person, you know, don't rush through it. Now, once they found an officiant, you know, you could probably, you know, just, you know, speak for yourself, but what does the process look like? So you book the officiant and now you have your wedding like a couple months down the line. So what happens in the meantime? What does that process look like? And what's involved between like the booking and the actual wedding day?
So there's two paths. There's the first one, the client who books me for both premarital counseling and their wedding date. That couple has a nice little journey laid out. So at that point, when you're doing premarital counseling, I actually include my husband, Reverend Joshua, who's also a reverend, and he does the premarital counseling with me. So clients are actually privy to having two counselors who are married. So it's sort of like having a couple walk you through the premarital counseling process. And my husband gets in contact with the couple and we begin to lay out a personalized custom schedule when we will get online virtually. We use Zoom to do all of our premarital counseling. And the reason why all of our premarital counseling is virtual as well is because our clients are nationwide. We've had clients as far as Kenya in Africa. Yeah, so it is actually beneficial to our company to actually fully be online. So when the pandemic hit, we were like, we're just going to continue to do what we do.
Yeah, you were ready.
We're ready. And it's just amazing because we have clients who are in California, and sometimes the couple doesn't live together. The couple sometimes could live in two different states or cities as well. So it has been very beneficial for it to be fully online. So my husband comes into the picture at that point, and he schedules according to what works with the couple's schedule, a time to meet 1 hour, 8 times before their wedding day.
Wow, 8 times.
8 times we meet. That's minimum. If they want to purchase more hours, they can, but minimum, everyone gets 8. And another thing that what happens for the client that doesn't choose premarital counseling is you're usually free. You're free to worry about other things about your wedding. But that 30 days leading up to your wedding, that's when we hit the ground running. I contact you to fill out a very detailed questionnaire. Now, I also include a FaceTime meeting if you would like. And it's only after you've seen the first draft of your ceremony. You can decide if you want to have it or not. But the reason why my questionnaire is not done verbally by just like looking at you and talking to you is because I need you to write things down. It's sort of like another contract, right? I don't want you to ever say you said something and then we're confused on who said it. So I just think it's always best if you write things out. And there's something about people writing out their story that I can feel a lot better than when they just sort of say it. So I'm a person of words as well. So sometimes I might take exactly what you said and then infuse it with me in it, so that it's my language and my way of saying it. But I really believe words are very powerful and that words affect people. So I wanna see the words you choose. I wanna hear the language you choose to describe something.
Absolutely, yeah, that's really great. And I feel like maybe for some people writing, they could express themselves a lot better in writing anyway.
Yeah, I mean, every now and then I do get a couple that's like, I don't feel like writing, I'm gonna do a video and send it to you. That works too.
Oh, okay.
As long as you answer all the questions I ask, I'm totally okay with that. But even then, you're still recording it, so I still have a point of reference to say, well, you did say that in the video or you didn't say that in the video. I just need to document everything because it's like a file, you know? Like, I just want to document everything and I want to get it right. That's very important to me, is to like get it right.
So, this has been so eye-opening. Like, I mean, I learned so much from this conversation, and I know, you know, my listeners are going to just learn so much from everything that you've said. And we're almost out of time, but I wanted to just kind of, you know, toss it back to you just really quickly. If there was anything that we missed or anything of importance that you just wanted to make sure couples understood about hiring an officiant.
Yeah, I mean, you're always going to want to look at, you know, like I talked about understanding the Jewish culture and religious understanding, asking them what their level of observance is. Well, it's sort of like the same thing when you're looking for an officiant. You always want to know what the level of flexibility is that they have. Right. And so in that idea, you will remember to ask certain questions. Right. What should I wear? Or are you allowed to do this or allowed to do that? Ask them what they are allowed to do, because technically there should be someone governing this person that's ordained. Now, if you got off the internet, you probably could do anything you want. I did not get my ordination off the internet. I got it from the actual body of organization. So I have people to answer to at the end of the day, and we have a particular way of doing things. So while I do have flexibility as to where I can do a wedding, and I've sometimes even taken people completely out of tradition, which I find to be okay as well. I'm more concerned about the love, and I'm more also concerned with the relationship of the couple than I am about sticking to a tradition. I don't know. I'm just one of those people. I just don't think that the tradition is going to either bring you good luck or bad luck. I think you need to work at your marriage no matter who you are.
Yeah.
So I always say, like, if you don't want to have your father walk you down the aisle and you don't want the minister to say who gives this bride away, we don't have to say it. It's not, you know what I mean? Like, it's whatever is going to make you feel best on that day and in that moment, and feel good about what you're representing. And so I don't want anyone to ever feel any kind of way that they're not sticking to any wedding tradition when it comes to oh, so-and-so has to walk together, or so-and-so has to do this. So you have to ask the crowd who's against this marriage or something crazy. I think that it's an opportunity and it's a day in our lives where people have a lot of creativity that they can put into their wedding ceremonies if that's what they want.
Yeah. And I think that's what makes it so special. And that's what makes it so memorable too. You know, everybody wants a wedding that people are going to remember. And the more personalized you can make it by doing things like that, I think the better. So we are almost out of time, but before I let you go, I always like to do this thing with my guests. And it's something called the five fun questions. And it's sort of like a lightning round, get to know you type deal. So whenever you're ready, I have some questions for you.
Okay, I'm ready.
All right. So what does marriage mean to you?
Marriage means to me two people who are coming together and not necessarily being so absorbed in each other that they want to become each other, but more so two people, individuals coming together and looking outward in the same direction. It is so important for two people to be on the same page. They don't have to be like each other. They're not trying to be like each other. They are two individual people coming together, looking outward in the same direction. And it also obviously includes love, but two kinds of love at the same time, simultaneously. Love as a feeling and love as a decision, okay? So it is a intellectual love, and at the same time, it is a feeling, it is emotional, and you know, it gets a grip on you, but it is both of those things. And I think that if we can see it as both of those things, at times when marriage is difficult and the feeling isn't there, then at least the decision, we can at least take your word, your vow, your covenant for something. So that's why I say the combination of those two things.
Wow. Oh, I love that. I love that. Because I love the way that you say, you know, it's two types of love. And I think people need to understand that. I think that's a great way of saying that. That's awesome.
I always describe it in ceremonies that way. People are like, I never thought of that.
Yeah.
People who have been married for years. I'm like, that is... You know, and my husband and I debated this. He debated this. He said, oh, people have to choose which one they're in. I said, no, I believe that you can really exist in both of them at the same time. And the more we can balance in both of them is like the harmony that we would want to have, you know?
Yeah.
I would be so afraid if my feelings were the thing that I was like leaning on.
Definitely.
Feelings are not like reliable. We all know this.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Definitely. So obviously you're a reverend. So how did that calling come? How did you know that you wanted to become a reverend?
Well, ironically enough, I was actually born in Trinidad, Trinidad and Tobago, it's not that small, but an island in the Caribbean. And in Trinidad, there's a interesting tradition that I don't know if they do anymore, where when you have a baby at the hospital, the godparents of the child also signs the birth certificate.
Wow.
We don't, you know, yeah, but I still have my original birth certificate, which is like this really long scroll looking thing. And I was looking at my birth certificate before I had a new updated electronic version of it. And I saw my godparents' signature, which I've not really encountered my godparents that often. They were just probably friends of my parents in Trinidad. And I saw that every person pretty much who signed my birth certificate, every person who signed my birth certificate was actually a reverend.
Wow.
Yeah, my parents met in seminary school.
Okay.
In Trinidad. So it was just, obviously, naturally, their friends were reverends,
yeah,
or their mentors, and they chose them to be the godparent, my godparents. And I had this birth certificate with all these reverend this, reverend that on the certificate. And even when it says child's father's profession, which that goes on the birth certificate too, it says pastor. And my dad's not a pastor today, but like, it's just incredible to me that even my birth certificate speaks this sort of oracles, if you want to be magical about it, like this foreshadowing about me. So I never as a child wanted to be a reverend. So that's definitely not it.
But I remember being in high school, and I went to the New York Performing Arts High School in Manhattan, and 9/11 happened. Mm. And I just saw how it devastated New York. Straight up, everyone was affected or touched in one way or another. And I remember feeling like such a negative or sadness, and sadness for human heroes. And when I'm talking about human heroes, I'm talking about, you know, police officers, firefighters, anyone that was a service member, because I felt like there was this weird complex where they were heroes, but at the same time, they faced a lot of darkness and struggled with a lot of darkness, and there was nowhere to go, because when you look to the community, you're a hero. So how could you have trauma, right? And I remember being like, that's worth helping. I remember like feeling like, if I'm going to help the world, like it's worth helping. And so I felt a call to that particular type of ministry, something that was crisis oriented. That's when I found military chaplaincy, and then I went into the military as a chaplain candidate while in seminary school. So that happened maybe like, I graduated undergrad in 2006, and I graduated high school in 2002. 9/11 has always been a part of my story, just something negative that sort of was a part of my story in terms of how I saw it affect my like classmates and stuff. But when I graduated school, I went into like retail management. And then you just get this feeling in your young adult life, like this isn't it. Like this isn't the calling thing. This is a job and I need to find my calling. And within that exploration, I found myself getting accepted into seminary school. And in the first year, doing some exploration about what I felt my actual ministry calling was. And then I fell into military chaplaincy and clinical chaplaincy. But when I was 7 years old, my parents separated. They actually separated. And I always say to people that that has been the biggest pain of my life. There's no other pain I think that can cause me as much pain, or hasn't, than seeing my parents separate. And so it's no mistake that my being a reverend has brought me here, has brought me in a place of officiating weddings and doing premarital and marriage counseling, because I have like this deep passion and care for it, because I want what happened to my parents. I really don't wish that for anyone. You know, I don't. And so that's the thing. I just want people together forever. That's like so important to me. Yeah. As childlike as that is, 7-year-old child in me still is there. Mm-hmm. And she wants everyone together forever. Yeah. If possible.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. Yeah. And I mean, everybody wants that happily ever after. And it's so interesting how like what happens in your childhood, you know, affects your adulthood. And, you know, your story is so special in that because of what happened in your childhood, now you're doing this, you know, keeping couples together forever, hopefully.
Yeah. It's like, yeah. And I always tell to say to people who are like, oh, I want to become a whatever, like what, fill in the blank, whatever. I'm like, just always make sure that it comes from a place of passion.
Yeah.
Because otherwise it becomes tiring. You know, every job has its parts that are like, you know, tiring. So make sure that whatever you choose to do comes from a place of passion. And then you, you know, won't have to ever work a day in your life. So.
Yeah. It's so true. So true. Now, you recently officiated a wedding. This is so cool. You officiated a wedding in Philadelphia. And for those of you listening, you have probably seen this photo because it went viral. This couple did their first look in the midst of a Black Lives Matter protest, but it wasn't planned. Like, they didn't plan to do that. It was just sort of like divine timing that it happened. And, you know, I'm sure you've seen this photo of this wonderful couple in the middle of Black Lives Matter protest, and you officiated that wedding. So how did that even happen? Like, tell me that story and what that meant after the fact or while it was happening. Like, tell me the whole thing.
So, So Dr. Carrie Ann and Michael Gordon were scheduled to get married at the Logan Hotel. This was something that they had scheduled a few weeks out. We didn't even know that there was going to be a protest. So I had to get in town hours before the protest even happened. To be honest, I was so full of anxiety. I didn't even know if I was going to make it in. I was driving from 2 hours away. I'm not even from Philly. I had to drive from 2 hours away to get to Philadelphia. Yeah. And I was just panicking the whole day, sort of feeling like I can't wait for this day to be over. To be honest, I love them. But like the fact that it was happening during a protest, I was kind of like, who scheduled this? Like, who thought this was a good idea? Like, I was worried, actually. Uh-huh. And it just turned out to be the biggest blessing ever. Not so much for the couple only, but really for the world. I felt like it was a symbol of peace, hope, and just unity. It was just something positive in the middle of friction or what felt like conflict or unresolved conflict between people in our society. And so it was a day that was full of a lot of anxiousness, a lot of anxiety, to be honest. And I always remind people of that when they say, oh, this seems planned. I'm like, whose idea would it be to be like, let's get up, get dressed in real wedding attire. It wasn't costumes. It was very nice, fine wear, as you can see. And let's go marching outside in the hot sun. Yeah. Nobody would be up there for that. And I surely wouldn't have been there. It would have just been a couple if it was a scheme, you know. Yeah. But they had photographer, videographer, me. And we actually, you know, I did marry them right after that happened. So this was prior to the actual ceremony. So by the time they said I do and walked down the aisle as Mr. and Mrs., they were already published in newspapers and magazines, people were calling, and this just became a sensation in a matter of like minutes and seconds.
Yeah. You know, because I follow you on Instagram, I had seen the picture and I was like, oh my gosh, that's so amazing that this happened. And then I check Instagram a couple minutes later and there it was on like five other Instagram accounts. And then it just blew up and I was like, oh my gosh, this picture, like this is like, it's such a symbol of, like you said, love and unity. And I was like, you probably couldn't have even planned that if you tried. I think it was just like serendipity that it all happened the way it did. And it was beautiful.
You would have had to pay all of those protesters. You know, like, think about it. Like, you know, and they were really involved protesters, by the way. They were like, really just, you know, like you could, like you would have to have Hollywood movie skills to plan something like that.
Yeah. So, oh, definitely.
I don't have Hollywood movie skills, but I mean, hey, I don't, but it's just been super incredible. I can't tell you. I will not take credit for that. I won't.
God. And what a great memory for that couple too. Cause now they have this photo that, I mean, it's just like, I get chills just thinking about it. Like the whole thing is so beautiful.
Iconic. I mean, I've heard a lot of, and read a lot of, publications who have compared it to the photo of the sailor kissing his girlfriend or wife after World War II. Wow. Like it's just iconic in that way. Yeah. The amount of art that they've received from artists around the world.
Oh my gosh.
It is just, there's no, I actually will be doing an Instagram live with them later on today. And I'm super excited for that.
Nice.
But like, you know, their lives have been changed forever, and not just because they're married, just because the whole world was sort of a guest at this wedding.
Absolutely. And then, you know, of course, I'm sure, you know, COVID had a lot to do with, you know, changing their wedding in the first place. You know, I'm sure, you know, they probably wanted something very different than what actually happened. So they have quite the story to tell that their wedding is going to live for a long time in their family legacy. That's for sure.
Definitely. It's one of those moments where I just realize, you know, God does stuff and we get so disappointed. And my mom used to always say when I was a little kid, every disappointment is for the better. And I hated when she said that because I was like, that's freaking ridiculous. Not everyone is for the better.
Yeah.
But it was one of those moments where my mom's voice again, every disappointment is for the better. And I'm like, it's a disappointment, but then it wasn't. It wasn't even their original day. Mm-hmm. That would have never happened if it wasn't COVID. Like COVID brought along a lot of other spiraling issues and this was one of them. And, you know, a long overdue thing. And I just feel like everything definitely happens for a reason, as crazy as that sounds.
Yeah. So my next question, what is your favorite hobby or pastime?
You know, I think one of my favorite things is truly not things that people would think are really great, such as watching reality TV. I love reality TV. I don't have any scripted shows that I watch. All the shows I watch are unscripted.
Yeah.
And I also love travel, but I like, you know, bougie travel. Like I like just sitting by a pool somewhere,
yeah,
like sipping a culotta and just, or a pina colada and just chilling, like just looking out into the sun, swimming a little bit, coming, like just doing nothingness, because yeah, I'm always doing something. I'm just a busybody. So yeah, doing nothing by the pool in a nice sunshiny environment and traveling the world and doing that exact thing in different locations is probably my favorite pastime.
Yeah, awesome. I can't blame you, because that sounds really nice.
Yeah, I love a good spectacle. So yeah, scripted shows just don't do it for me anymore. I have to watch things that just sort of feel a little random.
Yeah, definitely. But actually, you know, that kind of leads me to my last question. Describe your perfect day, which basically from what you said, that's kind of like your perfect day, just doing perfect, nothing, sitting by the pool.
Perfect day, like just a little reality TV, a little poolside action, and I'm not complaining about anything. Like, you know, right now I'm like working with several like luxury hotels, and like the reason why I'm doing it is because I like sitting poolside and just eating and having a drink and talking and just, you know, kind of doing nothing. Like sometimes to be still is a real hard thing for busybodies like me.
Oh yeah. Yeah. But it's so like, it's so refreshing. Like when you don't do anything, you know, it's just, it's so like rejuvenating, you know, sometimes you just need that to just kind of recharge. So,
yeah.
So that's awesome. Well, we are all out of time. It has been an absolute pleasure to speak to you. And so where can people find out more about you?
The number one way to find anything about me is definitely on Instagram at MarriedByRevRoxy. So all one word, at MarriedByRevRoxy. If you're looking to just, you know, kind of find out more information about my wedding specifically or only, you can go to www.marriedbyrevroxy.com. And those are my two outlets I'm mostly on. So I'll be always checking my email from the website, and I will always be on Instagram. But they can also go to Married by Rev Roxy on YouTube. That's my new little come up. Yeah. I've been trying to vlog as much as possible, and I have so much stuff from the last 3 years of doing weddings, like hundreds of weddings that I've done. I need to figure out really fun ways to vlog all of that activity. Yeah. And that's what I'm doing over on YouTube. So if you're just curious about the adventures of my world and being an officiant, and you just want to watch it because you love reality TV like me, definitely go to Married by Rev Roxy on YouTube.
Awesome. Well, I will put all of those links into our show notes so people could find you. And like I said, it has been an absolute pleasure speaking with you. I'm thrilled to have you on the show, and I can't wait to see what your next adventures bring. Well, I hope you took a lot of notes with this one, and I encourage you to re-listen as often as you need to, because there were so many nuggets of good information. I know I took like a page worth of notes, and I'm not even getting married. So we answered so many of the common questions couples have about finding an officiant on today's show. And whether you choose Rev and Roxy to officiate your wedding or choose someone else, you are now armed with a ton of knowledge to go out and find your perfect wedding officiant. If you've enjoyed this show and know someone who could benefit hearing it, I love it if you could share it with them. As a reminder, we're now on iHeartRadio, so don't forget to subscribe. And if this show is really helping you tackle that overwhelming planning learning curve, please leave a review and let others know how it's been helping you. We have an exciting announcement to make in the next several weeks, so you definitely want to make sure you keep listening and subscribe, because I'll be revealing what that is in an upcoming show. As a reminder, if you have a topic or a question you'd love covered on the show, definitely send it our way. You could find us on Instagram and Facebook at SBS Wedding Prep. And if you're a Hudson Valley bride or groom, join us over at Wedding Connections of the Hudson Valley at weddingconnectionshv.com and in Instagram at WedConnectHV. I'll be back next week with even more amazing wedding planning tips and advice. So until then, happy planning.